Welcome to Giving an Answer, the show dedicated to defending the historic Christian faith. I am your host, H.C. Felder, and today the topic is responding to arguments for same-sex marriage. And talk with me about this, I have my special guest, Dr. Michael Brown. Let me tell you about Dr. Brown. Dr. Brown is founder and president of Fire School of Ministry in Concord, North Carolina. He is the director of Coalition of Conscience and the host of the Daily National Syndicated, or a national daily syndicated radio talk show. He holds a PhD in Near Eastern Languages and Literatures from New York University. He served as visiting or adjunct professor at Southern Evangelical Seminary, Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary, Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, Fuller Theological Seminary, Denver Theological Seminary, the King Seminary, Regent University School of Divinity. He's contributed numerous articles to scholarly publications, including the Oxford Dictionary of Jewish Religion and the Theological Dictionary of the Old Testament. He's the author of over 20 books, including Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, The Tragic Story of the Church and the Jewish People, and the highly acclaimed five-volume series, Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus. Welcome to the show.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
There was so much more I could have added, but I figured the whole show would have just been me introducing you, so I had to cut some of it down.
That's good that you did.
But I am so glad that you're here. Could you at least briefly tell us about the Fire School of Ministry that was mentioned in Concord?
Sure. Our heart burns to see the next generation of revolutionary leaders raised up for the church, people that are really going to go out and make a difference, be it church planting in America, be it teaching at schools, be it missionaries overseas. We have over 200 missionaries that have gone out from the school serving all around the world. And FIRE is part of who we are. It's an acronym for Fellowship for International Revival and Evangelism. But FIRE is FIRE. We burn with passion for the Word, passion for the things of the Spirit, passion to touch a dying world. And we were formed originally in Pensacola, Florida, and then God called us up into Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm from New York, and I had to go north. I said, Lord, let me go back north. And he said, North Carolina. So we've been located right outside of Charlotte in Concord, right near the Speedway, actually. Okay. And we've got a full-time intensive ministry training program.
Oh, wow, that's great. That's great. So because I spent like 30 minutes introducing you, I guess we've got to get to it. So let's just throw it out there. What is wrong with same-sex marriage from a biblical perspective?
Most fundamentally, it's not marriage. We need to remember that because we constantly hear same-sex marriage, same-sex marriage. We need to remind ourselves in God's sight, in terms of what he intended, what he ordained, it's not marriage. Just like A, B, C, D is not math, and 2 + 2 = 4 is not spelling, a man plus a man or a woman plus a woman is not marriage. What God established at the foundation is that he created the human race in his image, male and female, he created them. We each reflect his image. The two coming together complement that and bring a full expression of God's image. It happens through marriage, and this is the way God set it up. The father leaves, the husband leaves his father and mother, cleaves to his wife, and the two become one flesh. Only a man and woman can become one flesh in that sense. Only a man and woman can procreate. Only a man and woman have the complementary parts biologically, emotionally, and everything else to form this one unit. That's what God established. And as much as there may be two gay men or two gay women that really care for each other and love each other, it is not marriage when they join together.
Okay, that's the biblical perspective. What's wrong with it from a societal perspective?
Well, we first have to remember that God set things up in a good way for a good reason. So even if someone doesn't believe in God, if they violate fundamental laws he sets up, it doesn't help, it hurts. Now let's think about society. Why does our society even get involved in marriage? Society doesn't tell you who you can date. The government doesn't tell you who you can hold hands with walking down the street. So why does the government get involved? Society conveys benefits on marriage because marriage conveys benefits on society. What are those benefits? Procreation of children for the next generation. It doesn't mean that every couple is able to conceive, but male and female are the only ones with the potential to conceive, reproduce, and then to join that next generation with a mother and father, which is the best nurturing system and setup for society. When kids are fatherless or motherless or two dads, two moms, it does not equal a mom and dad. So the only reason the government gets involved with this and even cares is because it has an interest in the next generation, it has an interest in stable families, it has an interest in the well-being of children. That's why government gets involved. So what God established is also the only thing that society's recognized. And let's remember, there have been homosexual relationships for generations, for centuries, for millennia.
Right.
No one thought of calling it marriage. In the ancient Greek world, in Jesus' day, it was very common for homosexual relations with men and boys and men and men. No one thought of calling it marriage because marriage remains something else. When gay activists want to redefine marriage, it fundamentally changes everything in the society.
Okay, so what I want to do is now, I am going to go through some of the objections because the show is called Responding to Arguments for Same-Sex Marriage. So I'm going to give some of the arguments that people use for justifying same-sex marriage. I actually went online, I searched a ton of websites, and some of these I'm going to read actually verbatim. But before I get to some of the ones I have here, you sort of touched on one that I actually forgot about. And that was the one that when you say that marriage is for procreation, for bringing children into the world, then the argument becomes, well, then people who don't procreate shouldn't be allowed to marry if that's the reason.
Right. What we're talking about is the essential ingredients of marriage, which is a male and a female. So there is the potential of procreation. And that's what the government cares about. That's why the government gets involved. If two old people get married, if sterile people get married, if people get married and choose not to have children, then the rule remains that only a man and woman joining together have that potential. If you put two men together and two women together for a trillion years on an island, they are not going to be able to procreate. So we're talking about the general rule, and laws are based on general rules. I'm sure a NASCAR driver can handle a higher speed limit than 70 miles an hour on the highway, but things are set up because we have to have society functioning on norms, and the norm is male, female. Also, isn't it a remarkable thing that every human being in the world, one way or another, has a mom and a dad biologically? That you still cannot have a human right. being without those two ingredients.
Right, that's true. That's true. Okay, now, to my chagrin, the NAACP has come out in favor of the view that this is an issue of civil rights. So the organization that knows more about civil rights than probably any other organization in this nation has said that this is a civil rights issue. So we should allow this because we are denying them their civil rights if we do not allow gays to marry.
Yeah, actually, it's an insult to the civil rights movement. Now, I understand the mentality. You're born this way, you can't change, you're being persecuted, you're being rejected, you don't have the same rights that others have, but the analogy breaks down on every level. Let's also recognize that there are plenty of black Americans that feel the way that you do and absolutely believe that gay activists have hijacked the civil rights movement.
Right.
There's the Coalition of African American Pastors. I had the leader of that, Reverend Bill Owens, on my radio show a couple of weeks ago. He was involved in the desegregation of the lunch counters in Nashville, Tennessee in the late 50s, early 60s. And he made clear we were not marching and doing what we did so that two men could marry. So let's think of the analogy. Number one, you cannot compare skin color and ethnicity to behavior. Two totally different things.
Right.
You can't compare skin color and ethnicity to romantic attraction and sexual behavior. That's the first thing that breaks down. The second thing that breaks down is you cannot compare the suffering that the gay and lesbian community have gone through, which is very real, getting bullied, getting beat up, some even getting killed, with the history of the slave trade
right.
and segregation. We don't have gay-only drinking fountains. We don't have right. gays sitting at the back of the bus. In fact, you have famous people like Ellen DeGeneres and congressmen like Barney Frank, and the list goes on in terms of prominent, famous, influential gay and lesbian people in our society. So you can't compare this to slavery, segregation.
Right.
Also, there's nothing wrong with a black man and a white woman coming together in union. The components for marriage, relationship, male, female, are all there, and there's nothing in Scripture that's against that whatsoever. And all you have to do is get rid of bigotry and bias. That's the only thing that stood in the way of interracial marriage. When it comes to two men or two women, you are now fundamentally redefining marriage. You're also fundamentally going against explicit scriptural teaching. You now have to indoctrinate little children into this, that this one has two mommies, this one has two daddies. And it becomes a threat to religious liberties and freedoms because we can't even hold to biblical convictions.
Right.
In no way is gay the new black.
Right. I must say that personally, it offends me, because when I look at the history of African Americans, when I look at the millions who've died on the Middle Passage, who were taken from their homeland and who were treated as property, who were abused and sold and beaten and maimed, all of these things for hundreds of years.
By the thousands and thousands and thousands.
Yes.
Multiplied thousands beyond
description. Multiplied. I mean, and you look at the horrendous conditions in which they came over to this country and compare that, there is no comparison.
No.
And it just, I think that what they're doing is they're playing, I'm just going to say it, they're playing black people for suckers. They're saying, you know what, we're going to ride on your coattail because it's beneficial to us. And unfortunately, there are a lot of black people who are saying, you know what, we've had people, you know, who just basically besmirching the history of African Americans, who basically besmirching the history of those who actually suffered, those who actually went through the torment and the torture, and to allow them to ride our coattail just because they want to ride it, just so they can do what they want to do.
Yeah, it's a great strategy, and I'm sure they're sincere about it, and in their eyes, there are parallels. The fact is, as you just eloquently described, the parallels break down. And let's just think of this. There is nothing moral or immoral about skin color.
Right.
There's nothing moral or immoral about ethnicity. This is just part of our humanity, part of our background. However, two men having sex is now a moral issue. It raises moral issues. It raises design issues in terms of, is this what God intended? So again, on every level, it breaks down. In my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, I have a whole chapter asking the question, is gay the new black? And then I come to some other conclusions and say, tell you what, let's just say it is. Let's just say you're born this way and you can't change. Now, I don't believe that. There is no reputable scientific evidence that says someone is born gay. And we all know people that have come out of homosexuality, some with a real battle and struggle, but they've come out of it. They've modified behavior. Many have modified attraction. So you can't compare that to skin color. You can't say it's innate and immutable. But here's the thing. Even if someone could argue that people were born this way, well, there are scientists who say there is a violent gene. There are scientists who say there's an obesity gene. There are scientists who say there's an adultery gene. Does that therefore glorify or justify violence or obesity or adultery? Do we have fat pride parades to celebrate obesity? Or if someone has, quote, an obesity gene, do we work harder to deal with it? What if a guy beats up a gay person and says, hey, I have a homophobic gene. I have a violent gene.
Right.
Judge, my genes made me do it. No, our genes don't make us do anything.
Right.
And once again, it's an unfair comparison. Skin color is innate, is immutable, is genetic. Our behavior is not.
Right. Now, some of these that I'm going to go through, you've already touched on, but maybe we can talk about them a little bit more. It is no one else's business if two men or two women want to get married. Two people of the same sex who love each other should be allowed to publicly celebrate their commitment.
First thing, marriage is not based on any two people who love each other can get married. What about a couple in Germany, separated from birth, never knew each other, until later in life find out their brother and sister fall in love, get married? Germany says no. Why? Isn't that unjust? What about the grandmother who in her 70s meets her grandson in his 20s? They immediately fall in love. They want to get married. Why is that wrong? Well, don't they love each other? What about the polyamorous relationships we hear about all over America now? Multiple loving partners. They're clamoring for their rights. Why can't they marry? They say, we love each other. Why are you being so intolerant? So first, everyone has lines that they draw. The second thing is, when you say it's nobody's business, once you redefine marriage, you make it everybody's business. Now, if you redefine it, that means those who differ with it, if it's redefined legally, they are now codified as bigots. That means, say, for example, in Denmark, there's a vote that says that clergy will have to perform same-sex weddings. If it becomes law in England and they legalize same-sex marriage, they redefine marriage in England, there's a debate, will clergy be required to perform these weddings? It gets taught in the schools. In Massachusetts schools, parents said, we don't want our first grader learning about Heather has two mommies and that kind of thing. And they said, but it's legal in our state. And the courts ruled, ultimately, that it's more important to teach the children, quote, diversity, than to honor the request of the parents. And they said, no, we're not going to tell you when we're going to teach on it, and you can't put your kid out when we do. So law after law after law, it's like dominoes all falling. If someone says, it's not my business what two consenting adults do in private, that's correct. If they're not breaking the law, that's between them and God what they do. And if they want to go to some local affirming church and have a blessing ceremony, or some affirming synagogue and have a blessing ceremony, that's their business. No one's trying to police them, tell them what they can and can't do. But when they want to redefine marriage, it redefines dozens and dozens of aspects of society, and now they make it everybody's business.
Okay. All right. Now, Frederick Perella, a professor of theology at Santa Clara University, a Catholic institution in California, says that he himself finds, quote, nothing in the Gospels, unquote, that should lead the church to oppose its legalization.
Oh, God help him. All right, let's look at this systematically. Let's first say that an argument from silence is weak and lacking in the first place. In other words, Jesus does not explicitly address bestiality, which the Old Testament does. He doesn't explicitly address pedophilia. He doesn't explicitly address wife beating and a number of other things. So do we therefore draw a conclusion that it's okay because he doesn't fundamentally address it? No. But in point of fact, he does address it. Let's start in Matthew 19, where he responds to the Pharisees in a question about divorce, that what God intended from the beginning was one man, one woman, and the two become one for life. Jesus explicitly affirms God's design for marriage as what is found in the beginning in Genesis, the second chapter. Let's go further. We're in Matthew 19. Let's go back to Matthew 15. There he talks about things that proceed from the heart, sins that proceed from the heart and defile the whole person. One of those sins in the plural is porneia, which refers to all acts of sexual immorality, meaning all acts outside of wedlock. And adultery, that sin, is for a married person to commit sexual sin outside of marriage. Porneia is all other sins outside of marriage, say, so fornication and things like that. So homosexual practice, which of course was completely condemned in the ancient Jewish world, is one of those sins under the category of porneia. Jesus says it defiles the person. And then Matthew chapter 5, beginning verse 17, Jesus says, don't think I came to abolish the law of the prophets. I didn't come to abolish, but to fulfill. So what does he do with the sexual purity ethic of the Old Testament, of the law? He takes it further. He says, for example, to a man, it's not just committing the act of adultery. It's lusting after someone in your heart. You've committed adultery in your heart. So he takes the sexual ethic and deepens it. And of course, the law explicitly forbade homosexual practice on a universal level. So even on a direct level, Jesus hits on this in three different ways and makes it clear that he is there to affirm the standards of his heavenly Father, not to tear them down.
Right. Good point. Another one, Dr. Brown, is a growing number of Americans support same-sex marriage.
Well, number one, the majority opinion is not always right. We know that.
Yeah.
There were times when, certainly for large portions of America, the majority of Americans supported slavery.
Right.
You say, well, we've grown and improved. Well, not all of our views are growing and improving. And how is it that Americans have come to this view? Well, some of them have come to the view because they grew up in such messed up broken homes, multiplied divorces and broken families and things like that. They don't know what a normal family is. Another thing is they've got a gay friend, gay schoolmate, gay neighbor, gay family member who's a great person.
Right.
And they want to be fair to that person. I commend their desire to want to be loving. But the biggest reason that they've changed is the media, the bombardment for the media. Our Vice President Joe Biden said that Will and Grace has done more to change American thinking than just about anything. There are gay activists. I documented in A Queer Thing Happened to America, the chapter on Hollywood's celebration of queer. There are gay activists in the late 1980s, and they talked about their plan to change American thinking through a planned psychological attack through propaganda coming through the media. So from Will and Grace to all these other sitcoms to Brokeback Mountain to movie after movie and TV show after TV show, Americans are bombarded with these images. And then you have the news like CNN, and they're just showing you the latest gay couple in Newsweek and celebrating this gay couple and gay marriage,
right,
and the
right.
Bible is for it, not against it. Most Americans haven't thought these issues through, so they have been negatively affected. There was a time when the majority of Americans were pro-abortion. That's shifting. So I believe, given time, that this will shift as well, and that the consensus will be biblical and right and not way off as it is now.
And to go further into what you're saying, I know not long ago, I went into Blockbuster, and they have more and more of these gay movies right there, I mean, right there on the shelves. On Netflix, they have a category, gay and lesbian category. They have channels on Uverse. They are gay and lesbian channel. So it's like we are completely, we're just completely bombarded with it, like you said. And I was listening to something on the radio that sort of got me to think, and it was the question was based on society, what percentage of the population would you say is gay?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Most people would say like 10%. And it was like 2%.
Well, hang on. The most recent surveys, let's say the number is between 2 and 3%, the most accurate studies point in that direction. There was the myth that was perpetrated by Kinsey beginning in 1948 that it's 10%.
Right.
So you still hear that, 1 in 10. You hear that around the world, 1 in 10. It's just, it's a myth based on bogus information. I've read books by gay activists. They say 5% or a little less. The most accurate figures put it closer to 3% or less. The most recent Gallup survey indicated that most Americans think, are you ready? 25% of the population is gay. And the younger generation, say college age and into the 20s beyond that, they think it's almost 1 in 3.
Wow.
Who would get that idea? You know it's statistically not true. You know in your neighborhood, your community, your friends, unless you live in a heavily gay area, it's not true.
Right.
Where do they get it from? The bombardment through
the media.
Right. Look, I wrote an article for Town Hall, townhall.com. I write regular articles there. And it was called Mutant as a Code Word for Gay in the X-Men movies. I don't see a lot of movies, but I saw a couple little clips, and I was on a plane on a long flight and saw one of the X-Men movies. I thought, wait a second, this is overt. The being a mutant is a code word for being gay. You're born this way, you're specially gifted, your created society doesn't understand you, you have to come out, you have to be out and proud. How come we didn't know you're a mutant? You didn't ask, I didn't tell. Don't ask, don't tell, the whole bit.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm watching this, so I begin to research it and find from some of the screenwriters and others and say, of course, we're trying to get these themes in there and make these comparisons. I wrote an article about it, and then I see some gay website mocking me. Brown just figures this out? Who didn't know this?
Wow.
And then you take it, becomes more overt. So June 2012, Gay Pride Month every June, sadly celebrated and commended by our president every year he's been in office. What happens in the comic books? June 2012, the Green Lantern, who's been a mainstay of DC Comics for 70 years, the Green Lantern's coming out as gay.
Yeah,
even though he's been married with two kids, the Green Lantern's gay. And Marvel Comics later, June 2012, later in the month, what happens there? Northstar, one of their superheroes, is having a same-sex marriage.
Wow.
Kids read this, and they get so inundated by it, it changes their way of thinking. And what's fascinating is here in North Carolina, with all the talk and the hoopla and all this, and our side in terms of the side for marriage getting outspent 2-1, and also, demographically, you've got, say, 3 Democrats for every 2 Republicans in North Carolina. This crossed party lines. This crossed every line. And here we vote for marriage, 61% to 39%. The Charlotte Observer is absolutely floored. They're so upset. This is shameful and disgraceful.
Yeah.
Governor Perdue says, what's happened in North Carolina? We look like Mississippi.
Alabama.
Mississippi.
Yeah.
We look like Mississippi. And yet, hey, we voted for it again. 31 states out of 31.
Yeah.
Many even question, when you dig deeper into the polling, if the majority of Americans still do not stand firmly for marriage.
When you were talking about the bombardment and how it's just inundated in our culture and how even some of our old heroes are being redefined, it reminded me of my wife and I went to see The Color Purple. It's one of my favorite movies. I mean, I love the movie. But we went to see the play here in Charlotte, down at Bloomberg. And we watched the play, and at the end of the play, the star, Celie, is gay. She's living with, I can't remember the other character name, but they're living together, they're having a lesbian relationship. Where was this in the book? Where was this in the movie?
And what did it add? what did it do for the story, for the plot?
Absolutely. It just made me sit there and say, I got upset. I was like, this is, why? Why, other than to just put something in my face that they're trying to shove down my throat?
That's exactly right.
And speaking of shoving down throats, this is what they were saying. When your view of marriage is based on your religion, so denying same-sex marriage is not. It goes. It's based on your religion. You can't force your religion on other people.
Right. You know, there's so much to say to that. First, we're told separation of church and state. Of course, it's not found in the Constitution. It's not even found in the First Amendment. First Amendment just says that the state will not establish a religion and the state has to stay out of religion's business. But when the term initially comes up, Roger Williams, it's a concept, comes from him, and then Thomas Jefferson uses it. It's basically saying you need a wall to keep the state out from the church so that the state does not try to use its enormous power on the church. That's the first thing. So the idea that you cannot vote based on your personal religious conviction and that violates separation of church and state is complete nonsense. That's the first thing. The second thing, we have pastors right here in Charlotte, like Pastor of Myers Park Baptist Church. What does he say? As a Christian minister, he is opposing the amendment and he's asking everyone to vote against the amendment as a Christian minister. What happened to separation of church and state? When we have a religious view and we vote against gay activism based on it, everyone says separation of church and state, you can't do that. And then when it's a liberal who's standing up for gay causes and they say, based on my religious beliefs, I want to redefine marriage, they applaud that.
Yeah.
So it's so hypocritical. But let's go further on this.
We've got a minute.
Everyone can vote. An atheist can vote based on being an atheist, a Muslim based on being a Muslim. What we cannot do and should not do is try to force the entire nation to go to church on Sunday and read the Bible and profess the Christian faith. But our morality comes from Scripture, and we're unashamed of that. And even without the Bible, I say same-sex marriage is not marriage, and we should vote against it.
Okay, we're at the end of the show, but I have to ask you this question, but you don't have much time to answer it. But I just have to ask you this one, because this is one of my favorite ones. Homosexual marriage is about love. Jesus would never prohibit anyone from loving one another or another.
Jesus prohibits all kinds of wrong love, wrong relationships. Doesn't matter how much the people love each other, if they're transgressing God's bounds, if it's a man who loves another woman and he's married, Jesus is against that. If it's two brothers who love each other, Jesus is against that. If it's four people, two men, two women who love each other and want to have a relationship, Jesus is against that. Love tells the truth, and the Word of God says open rebuke is better than secret love. Real love, look someone in the face and say, this is wrong. I forgive you for your sin. Now straighten out and go and sin no more.
Okay. Dr. Michael Brown, thanks for joining with me, talking about what the topic of the show is, responding to arguments for same-sex marriage. And that will end this episode of Giving an Answer. And until then, goodbye and God bless.
You can find out more about Giving an Answer, as well as listen to other episodes by visiting us online at www.givinganswer.org.